Hey, we are kicking off this series this morning called Spark. This is all about ideas that ignite. And Anne is no motivational speaker. She is no Matt Foley, but she is going to bring an incredible amount of wisdom this morning. And so I'm really excited to have Anne with us. I'm Chris, by the way. I'm pastor of multiplication and growth here at CrossPoint. And this is Anne Smith. Anne Smith has been here several times.
Even back before you got the building when you were meeting in the school.
So, like, several times. Wow, I didn't even know that. Okay, well, that's really awesome. So, Anne is here to share with us. And this whole series is about these ideas that create a spark, that want to move the needle on things. And so, Anne's got a bunch of great things for us this morning. And there's actually a list of 9 questions. These are things that in your weekly, if you open it up, this isn't the host segment. It feels natural for me to be doing this. But in your weekly, there are a list of 9 different things, and these are things that Anne's going to be talking about this morning. She's going to kick it off, but before we get there, this is going to be some audience participation. So this morning, what we're going to do is there's a number that we would love for you guys to decide what Anne is going to talk about next, okay? So what you can do is you can text SPARK to this number, 25827, and then just put the number of this that you want to talk about. So 1 through 9, whichever one you want Anne to jump into next, and I'll kind of moderate that. And so wherever you guys want to go is where we're going this morning. But before we get there, Anne has got one she's going to kick off for us. So Anne, I'm just going to sit here and the stage is yours.
Thank you, Chris. It's wonderful to be back with you this morning. And I'm going to start out by talking about what's happening with me right now. Back in January, on my 94th birthday, we were getting ready to go out to dinner, and I had a little TIA, which affected my balance. I started staggering down the hall. I was going to get ready to go out for dinner. And I've been living with that since January. It just affected my balance, nothing else, no other problems. I was so determined I was going to get my balance back. It was just consuming me that I was going to work so hard and get it back. Several weeks ago, a question popped into my mind, and I believe it was God-inspired. The question was this: is good balance an absolute necessity for quality of life? The answer is obviously no. So it started me on a journey, and I'm thinking about, is good balance desirable? Absolutely. I would love to have my balance back where it was. And I have good days. I have really good days. Today's not one of them, as Chris has found out. He said to sort of guide me because my balance is off. But good balance is not absolutely essential for quality of life. So I'm on a journey. I'm thinking about the things that are really desirable, and good balance is one of them. There are a lot of things that are desirable that are not essential. So I'm trying to figure out, what are the qualities in life that are absolutely essential to live an abundant life, to have quality of life? The world tells us what's desirable. God tells us what's essential. And so I'm on this journey. I don't know where I'm going to end up, but I'm excited about the journey because I'm learning something in the process. You know, abundant life is something that I believe every person wants. Each one of us is on a unique journey. Your journey is different than mine. Mine is different than yours. We are on a journey, but so often we sort of shift into neutral and just let life happen, and we don't ask the questions. We don't do the processing. We don't discover that we are truly a story. You are a story. I'm a story. Absolutely, I am a story. I am not a series of isolated events. They all are connected, and I have to learn how to connect the dots and learn from this faith journey. Faith is transforming my journey, but I have to take the time to connect the dots and see what my story is and how God is at work in my life and what he's doing in my life. So I'm excited about this, but I want to talk this morning about the things you want to talk about, the things that are on this list, because there are so many essentials, so many things that we must discover if we want to have this abundant, full, joyful, meaningful life. Does that mean things always go our way? Absolutely not. And so I want you to plug in and tell me what it is you want me to share with you this morning.
So here's the one that I have seen over and over already, is number five, and it says, celebrate the fact that life is not about being complete, but about being full.
Oh, how true that. As a matter of fact, I am so excited over being incomplete. You know, God is not through with me. I still have so much to learn. There's so much out there for me to discover. There's so much for me to discover as I walk this journey, whatever the journey may be. But I have to confess to you that some of the most uptight people I know are Christians. Oops, should I have said that?
Hey, we've said worse.
There's something about us. We want so much to be perfect, and we strive, and we use our energy trying to be perfect. It's not about being complete. It's about being full, and there's a difference between the two. I will be complete only when I go to be with God. That's when I will be complete. In the meantime, I need to be full at the place I am on this journey. Just full as I can be. And then God is continuing to teach me. He still has so much yet for me to learn. And that's exciting to me. That's what gives meaning to life. I first discovered how to verbalize this. I had been discovering it in my life, but I didn't know how to verbalize it, that being full instead of complete, until after my husband died. I had been married to him for 53 and a half years, and after he died, I had a flashback. I'd never had it, never had thought of this in all the years we were married, but it came to me after his death. We were sitting in his little Grace Studebaker on campus at Anderson College, and we were talking about love and marriage. And I remember, and it was like I could hear Nathan's voice saying, he said, honey, you say you love me with all your heart, and I believe it, and you believe it, and I say the same thing. But what we both need to realize is that 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, however long we have together, we'll look back at this time and know we didn't know a whole lot about love. Oh, that was so wise, but I was young and in love, and it went in this ear and right out the other ear, and I never remembered it after that until after he died. And I got so excited as I was thinking about that. I said, wow, how wise that was. I was full of love as I sat there in that little Grace Studebaker. I loved him all that I was capable of loving him. But 53 and a half years later, oh my, to compare that with what was happening back there at little Studebaker. And then I started thinking, wow, that's what the faith journey is about. It's about being full for where we are on the journey, but it's not about being complete, because God is always has more to teach us, more to help us experience, and more depth that he wants to give to us, and more. And someday we will be complete. So I'm excited over being incomplete, and I hope you are too. And I hope you're open to learning whatever it is God has for you in the future.
The next one, and this one's coming, and keep texting these numbers, you know, send the spark and then just the number of the question that you're looking for. Number eight, live life with expectancy instead of expectations.
I really do believe expectations are one of the worst things that we indulge in. It's not that we don't have expectations. It's just a natural part of being human. But when we live only with expectations and not expectancy, we get in trouble. I'll be honest with you. That's the only way I know how to be. I'll be honest with you. This first started quite some years ago. When did music styles start changing?
When did it start changing?
Yeah, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. 30 years ago,
that's
however long it was.
Before my time, quite honestly.
Years don't compute. Years don't compute with me. But anyway, since I'm old, I can talk about this. Back when music styles started changing, I loved the choir. I loved the organ. I loved all of this, you know, and things were changing. And not like they are now, but they were changing. And a strange thing happened to me. I began to leave church on Sunday morning and just a little bit disappointed. And as things began to change more and more and more, I realized that on Sunday morning, I was not getting up just really eager to go to church. And so that started me on a journey, of course. You know, what in the world is going on? You know, all of your life, you've loved to go to church. What's wrong? And so I discovered that I was going to church with expectations, and when my expectations were not met, I came away disappointed. And so I made a conscious decision that I would enter the doors of the sanctuary not with expectations, but with expectancy. I'd give God all the wiggle room he needed to do whatever he wanted to do. And it was absolutely amazing what happened to me. Change kept coming. And so initially, if I'm really honest, I have to tell you, initially the way I handled it was when I would go to church and we were singing something that was just totally out of my realm of experience, I would look for somebody who was just really being blessed. And I would just celebrate the fact that they were being blessed. And the amazing thing is, I began to change. Expectations, when I think things have to be a certain way, and in our relationships, expectations really do a lot of damage. The problem is, when you have an expectation of somebody, and that expectation, that one expectation is not met, you don't see all the wonderful things about them that surround that. You get so focused on the expectation. I happen to believe there are blessings circling over our heads. Your head, my head, everybody's head, there are blessings circling over your head all the time. But the runway of your life is so filled with expectations, they can't find a place to land. So don't live your life with expectations. Expectancy. Give God all the freedom he needs to do whatever he wants to do, but just trust him and let life happen. But don't lay the expectations. Because we miss so much. It's like the old thing, you know, you put up a big white sheet of paper and you put a black dot on it and you say, what do you see? Everybody will say a black dot. Nobody says, I see a lot of white space with a little black dot on it. We get focused on our expectations and we miss. Oh, we miss so much of what God has for us. So clear off those expectations that are in here so that these blessings circling around can find a place to land.
So there's a couple that are coming in, but number nine is one that even myself, I'm very intrigued to hear what you have to say on this. So you wrote, never forget that God has not called me to defend him, but to just simply reflect him. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I became a Christian many, many years ago before most of you were ever born. And I have to say to you that when I became a Christian, and I don't blame anybody for this, but what I thought I heard and what I experienced, I thought that there were two main jobs of the Christian. Number one, to defend God, and number two, to set everybody else straight. That's not God's plan. I am not called to defend God. I am called to reflect him. And I believe that defending God has something to do with the head knowledge, and reflecting him has something to do with the spirit. It's this spirit of God. I want my spirit to be the kind of spirit that is contagious, not abrasive. But when we begin defending our position, when we begin defending, these days we can't, dialogue is just very, very difficult when you get into certain issues because everybody's defensive. I'm not called to defend anything. I'm called to reflect. My theme for the rest of my life is this. I want to stand like a mountain, immovable and unshakable for those things that are foundational, but at the same time, I want to flow like life-giving water. And my view of Christendom right now in North America is that we have many people who stand like a mountain, immovable and unshakable, but they do not flow like life-giving water. They're abrasive. They are defensive. They are trying to defend God. They're trying to defend what they believe. They're trying to defend instead of reflecting. I believe I'm called to reflect. And I don't have to see eye to eye with you about what you believe. I don't have to see eye to eye with you, but I am called to reflect the spirit and the presence of Jesus Christ. And only when we are non-defensive, only then can we talk about our differences. I believe love is the atmosphere in which our differences become contributions rather than irritations. And when you are defensive, differences are always, always irritations. And so when you are reflecting, the differences can be incredibly wonderful.
That's so good, especially in this climate we live in. I mean, this is... It's something we walk into every single day, that we feel the need to defend and defend and defend, and but to just simply recognize, no, that's not my job.
That's not my job. And I cannot change anybody on the face of this earth. That's not my job. My job is to create an atmosphere in which God can change them. It's not my job to change anybody. And defensiveness has at its roots the need to change somebody's opinion, to change them or to change their way of thinking. That is an agenda that is God's territory, not my territory.
That's so good. That's so good. Next one that I've seen a lot of different times throughout, and keep sending them our way, guys, 258, 27. And number seven is allow gratitude to permeate me every single day and all throughout my ordinary life.
I learned something about me the other day that was just really fascinating. It had to do with gratitude. I was in Bob Evans' restaurant with some friends, and there was a middle-aged man who was helping an elderly woman come into the restaurant, and she really, really, really was having a struggle. I'm dealing with balance, but this woman was really... And all of a sudden, this gratitude welled up inside of me for the degree of balance that I have in my life these days. The shock was... The gratitude grew out of comparison. Gratitude ought to arise. It does arise sometimes, but we shouldn't need comparisons to have gratitude. I shouldn't. I don't know if this computes with you or not, but this was just really an eye-opener for me, and I said, oh my goodness, my gratitude grew out of a comparison rather than just a natural gratitude. I have a little wooden block on my dresser in my bedroom, and it says, gratitude turns what I have into enough. Gratitude turns what I have into enough. Gratitude should be the air we breathe. It should be when I think of what God has done for me, when I think of his grace, when I think of his forgiveness, when I think of his... Oh, and when I think of his patience, God has an incredible amount of patience. To have journeyed with Ann Smith all these years, I mean, how many times his patience has been tried? How many times have I failed to live up to what I know up here? Sometimes the journey from here to here is kind of a long journey. But I think of that, and I want gratitude to just be the air that I breathe. It says there is a definition of love that I absolutely think is priceless. Love is unconditional commitment to an imperfect person. Love is unconditional commitment to an imperfect person. That's what God's love is for me. It's God's absolute unconditional commitment to Ann Smith, this imperfect person that he's in the task of changing and stretching and growing and transforming increasingly into his image. So that's what it is. But if we're going to love like God, we need to have love that is unconditionally committed to imperfect people. Imperfect people are part of your life. We're all imperfect. We are becoming increasingly shaped into the image of Christ. There's still much to learn. So gratitude is one of the essentials of life. It's not just something that is desirable. It's something that I think is essential. If we want to live life to the full, if we really want that inside of us, gratitude has to become the air we breathe.
The next one is, and probably some of you are annoyed that we haven't got to this one yet. I've seen number two come across maybe 40 or 50 times, honestly.
I am.
Number two, and this is, Kurt actually told me that there was a prayer use that you taught a Sunday school class years ago when Kurt was in youth ministry. Oh. And there was a prayer that you would pray that went something to the extent of, let them make enough mistakes that they...
Oh.
So the number two is, believe that there is incredible richness and wisdom to be gained from failure.
Wow.
And I think we could probably go just the entire morning till probably about 11:30, but we only have about 9 more minutes.
Okay.
So let's just... Number two, incredible richness.
I think there is incredible richness and wisdom to be gained from failure. As I reflect on these many years of living, I have learned my greatest lessons after failures, when I failed. The problem is, when I was younger, I was so eager to get my failure behind me and get on with life. I would push it back here and just get on with life and never deal with it and never learn the richness and the wisdom to be gained. And even now, at this age, every now and then when I think of some failure that was way back in the past, I will say, God, is it too late to teach me the wisdom and too late to teach me the richness that I missed when I failed back there? One of our real problems is, We hide our failures. We try to hide our failures. We need to remember that what we hide, we keep. Only what we reveal can be healed. And when we push our failures aside and try to pretend they don't exist, we just want to get on with life, we are missing the richness and the wisdom that can be gained. I am absolutely convinced that it is not our failures and our or even our sins that hinder the work of God's kingdom. It's pretending we don't have any. And so we've got to learn to acknowledge that we are in process, that God is increasingly shaping us. And there will be times when we fail, but look at those failures and ask the right questions. Process, reflect, let God teach you what he wants to teach you through that failure. And we miss so much in life. I think of this has something to do with our expectations also. There are people who come into this journey of faith thinking that once I follow Jesus Christ, everything's going to be a bed of roses. That's not the way it works. Life is both and. It is both and. It is both joy and pain. It is both success and failure. It is all of that. And until we learn to accept that, one of our expectations is we expect life to be fair. Life is not fair from our perspective, our definition of fair. Life is not fair. We come into that and we think life is going to be. We come into marriage. Oh, we get married. You can tell me whether or not you identify with this. A lot of people get married and they think, if you really love me, you'd know what I'm thinking and feeling. That is so untrue. That's such an unrealistic expectation. Life is both and we need to embrace both. I believe that the best wit... I've known many Christians in my lifetime who say, I can't be a good witness because of my failure. God wants to use your failure as a witness. You acknowledge it. You do everything in your power to make it right. You ask God to teach you and to help you to grow through this experience. When people come into the Christian faith, come into the faith journey with Jesus Christ, they are not looking for perfection as much as they're looking for someone who will journey with them in the tough times, in the sad times, in the lonely times, in the failure times, in the success times, in every time of life. They're looking for someone who journeys with them and takes everything that comes into our lives, the good, the bad, the wonderful, the horrible, and uses it for our growth. And I really believe that. So I don't want us to think that a failure is not a failure unless you fail to learn from it. The minute God teaches me something from a failure, wow, I'm much further down the road than I was before the failure happened. He uses everything that comes into our lives for our growth if we allow him to do so. So don't run from failure, but don't hide your failures. Deal with them. Ask God to use them. Ask God to teach you. Ask him to use your failures as a part of your witness.
Yeah, you said, and I want you to say it again, just so we don't miss this. You said, only what you reveal, God can heal. Is that the way you...
That's right.
Okay. So you gave me four questions. So our time is running. I have no idea where the clock went. I it's right in front of me, and I don't know how it's possible we're already here, but you gave me four questions. Our goal every single week is we want to give tangible walkouts. We want to help people walk out and really hit the ground running with this. And these lists of living life to the fullest, first off, this list is absolutely incredible. Where did this come from?
These are questions that I'm asking because I want my life to be abundant. I want it to be overflowing with the presence of Jesus Christ. I want it to be contagious. I want it to create hunger in people. So I'm asking myself these questions. Do I believe abundant life is possible? If so, what do I do? What is the difference between the world's view of the abundant life and a view based on faith? The world's definition of abundance, oh my, they are constantly telling us what is desirable, but they're not telling us what is essential. What is the difference between these two views of the abundant life? And what is the lens through which I view life? Do I view life through a lens of abundance, or do I view life through a lens of scarcity? There's not enough of anything. There's not enough anything in this world. And so I become very self-centered. I want everything for me. Life takes on a whole different meaning when you view it through scarcity and when you view it through abundance. And do I believe abundant life is possible? If so, what would it look like and what do I need to do? Are there ways that I'm being robbed of the abundant life I desire? If so, what is the reason? Questions are such an important part of life. Rachel Remen says, "My father rewarded me for having the right answers. My grandfather rewarded me for asking the right questions." In my faith journey, I've discovered that asking questions opens the door for God to give me some direction and to change me and transform me. So, are there ways that I'm being robbed of the abundant life I desire? And if so, what is the reason? I believe the abundant life is possible for every person here, and I believe it's possible for me. I don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss it. So these are questions that I'm asking myself.
So we've got some next steps. And if you grab your weekly, on the back of your connection card, there's a few next steps that Ann put together. But there's one specifically that I know you want to talk through. It's this third one.
I will choose to view life through the lens of abundance rather than through it. If this week, every person in this room could choose to view life through the lens of abundance, that God's grace is abundant, that God's forgiveness is abundant, that God's strength is abundant, that God's presence is abundant. There is this abundance just filling the universe, but we are so unaware of it. If this week you will focus on viewing life through the lens of abundance instead of scarcity. I'm fearful that God is not going to come through for me. Last week I saw a billboard on the west side of the highway and it said, "Let go, I will catch you, Jesus." It was not advertising a church or anything. It just said, "Let go, I will catch you, Jesus." That's all it said. This week, if every person in this room will view life through that lens of the abundant grace of God, the abundant forgiveness of God, the fact that absolutely, unequivocally, he will be there to catch me every time I let go. So that's my prayer for you this week, that you will just open up your life and let the abundance of God be overflowing in your life and your journey, because the faith journey is about every aspect of your life, every aspect. Nothing is left out. Will you pray with me, please? God, we're your children. We read in Scripture, consider the incredible love of the Father in allowing us to be called the children of God. And that is not just what we are called, but we are what we are. God, we long for this abundant life that you so freely give. But so often we get our lives just shift into neutral and just go along unaware and missing the great abundance that you have for us. God, will you come and journey with each one of us this week? Give us the eyes to see your abundance all around us. Help us to know that there are blessings circling over our heads, looking for a place to land. Help us to create that space within our hearts, within our lives, within our schedules that will allow those blessings to land and so enrich our journey. We love you, God. But what's more important is you love us with a love that we can never fully comprehend. You are there for us in the good times, the bad times, the horrible times. God, thank you, thank you, thank you, that your love is unconditional commitment to us, your children, who are on a journey of being increasingly shaped into the image of Jesus Christ. Let us open our hearts, touch each one. We're each unique. We each have a different journey. So come and touch each one of us at that place where we most need to be touched. And may our lives be enriched because of your touch. In the name of Christ, our wonderful Lord and Savior, who makes it all possible, in his name I pray. Amen.